milk. To Miracle Nutrition. With Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now for a full hour of friendship and frivolity, of fun and funiculars. Not really, though. Fun and foolishness. Feeble. I'm Trainer Goodhill. I remember the past. It was a long time ago. I remember the past. Those old days, they were in the past a long time ago. I'd like to go to the past, visit the past. And them were the days. I mean, those were the days. Beg your pardon. I remember visiting my meemaw in Florida. She lived in Bithlow. Well, not really Bithlow, outside in unincorporated Orange County. In a double-wide trailer. It didn't look like a trailer, though. It looked like a mansion. And the outside was stucco and wood and brick. And my papa, before he died, had built a tower. So it looked like a Victorian mansion, Edwardian. Victorian? Edwardian. One. But not a trailer, except on the inside. It had shag carpeting so deep it was like walking in a meadow. If the grass in the meadow had cigarette ash in it. Meemaw said it cleansed the carpet. And the ancestors would use ash to clean. But it didn't smell right to me, but I don't know. And she lived in a park called Waka Waka Nene Springs or something. Waka Waka Nene Village. And I don't think it was a real native name. I think it had been made up by some cynical person. But it replaced the older name of White Powder Springs, which people were mispronouncing and giving the place a bad reputation. So did they make it worse? Arguably. And in the middle of that village, or that trailer park, was a pond. It was a man-made pond, but like all bodies of water in Central Florida, it had inhabitants living in it. What kind of inhabitants, you may ask, were living in it? Gators. There's a gator in every pond, at least one. Sometimes more than one. Sometimes there'll be a crocodile, too, depending on where you are in Florida. Crocodiles, real, I think. Might be some very far south, I don't know, I heard that. Or a gharial? They escape from zoos. And the bathtubs of rich folk. Nobody knows where they come from. Maybe they spontaneously appear in water. Maybe the gator is some kind of manifestation of our darkest secrets. Reptilian. Basic. Frightening. And always lurking beneath the dark surface of our soul. Except for the nostrils. Some nostrils. Now here comes the really heartbreaking part of this. When Papaw died, Meemaw got a little companion, a small fluffy dog named Muffin. And Muffin was by her side always, bringing her joy. What a happy little soul Muffin was. Just a pure heart, innocent, trusting. Never met a dog like it. It was like an innocent child or an angel. So I had to readjust something. You might know where this is going because alligators eat small dogs. But that's not exactly where this is going. The alligator did eat the small dog. But when I went to sit down to write about it, I had a problem. Because every time I put any kind of verb after alligator and before Meemaw's Muffin, it sounded not good. So I'm thinking, do I rename the dog? That seems like the easiest thing to do because the accuracy of the dog's name is not really important to the story. The story is about loss or foolishness or something. So I will change the name of the dog to Heart and say that gator ate Meemaw's heart. That gator snatched Meemaw's heart and ate it. Just went right chow down on that heart, bit it up. Meemaw lost her heart to the gator in the pond. 'Cause I think there is a lesson. Like, for instance, a dog on a leash. It was the dog on a leash because that makes a lot of difference. Well, maybe not. It depends on... People have those leashes that are so long. I think, well, now it's effectively not a leash, is it? If the leash is so long and it just keeps going because you've got it on attached to some kind of popiel pocket fisherman thing or, I don't know, what looks like a snap line. And the dog's on the other end, but there's nothing. It just can pull an infinite amount of leash out on it. Have you seen these? Have you seen this? Have you seen this? And that doesn't seem like it's even a leash then. It's going to run into an alligator's mouth or traffic or down a drainage pipe. What? And then what? And you go, well, I got a button I push and it reels it in like a tape measure. Well, I don't know. That wouldn't work with my dog. I guess the point of this is the past, to get me out of the past. I don't want those good old days are the source of my grief. Wipe my memory. So many of you been requesting to hear some Trainer Goodhill. And there is that's Trainer Goodhill from the album I Remember the Past. And he's entertaining. I remember back when I was young, oh gosh, his records were everywhere. You'd be watching the television when I was a boy, and they'd say, here's some dang old records to get. And one of them is Get It On by K-Tel, and that had all sorts of things on it. And one, Zamfir, maybe. And... and the fella who yodeled, and he was really good, and his name will come to me, but he went, oh, Rosemary, I love you, I'm always thinking of you. I have one of his albums, and he had a little mustache, and he looked like Omar, the guy who does the horoscopes in the paper. Same sort of mustache. Oh, people had those back when I was young. I would like to speak to you today about nostalgia. Now, I'd like to break it down for you. You heard the song where it's talking about the nostril of the alligator sticking up through the pond. That's what nostalgia means. It means to flare out your nose, make your nose go wide for an imagined past. So, I don't really think so, but it doesn't matter, does it? Because that's kind of what it means. I mean, as long as I'm poetically defining the word, I don't know that its etymology really makes any difference, does it? It's hard to know, really. We always take it on faith what language things come from, but who knows? You know the way people mess things up. People misspeak and everything. Well, I would like to just go ahead and reminisce then about, I'm going to take you through an average day that I remember. Now, you've got to also keep this in mind. I'm not keeping things in mind. They're falling out of my brain. So I've reached the stage in my life where my mind palace is starting to disintegrate around the edges. Oh, it's beautiful. It's just erosion. It happens to all mind palaces. And finally, the ground underneath them collapses and they're gone forever. Oh, but the information goes back into some kind of big stream, but you can't retrieve it. So does it matter? I love that about black hole is like some kind of library that nobody has a card for. So it's got all the information in the universe. It's like the universe's Library of Alexandria. Yeah, but you can't get in. You can't go in. Or if you do go in, that's you get smushed and you get put into a book. Oh, really? It's just like that. So I'm not going to do that, but I am going to reach into the past because ubi sunt, as they say, I forget the rest of that phrase, but it's Latin and it means, where are they now? Where have they gone? You know, where's Abraham, Martin, and John? Oh, they're all, that was an assassination song. That's not it. They don't make them like something anymore. I don't know if there's any songs like, they don't write them like that anymore. That's an ubi sunt. So I don't want to exactly do that because, of course, they make them just like they did. Low quality. But I'd like to reminisce about some of my low quality, phoned in entertainment for children when I was a lad, because I was a little tiny boy. I remember it. I don't. There's pictures, but then I saw Blade Runner. I'm thinking, I don't know what these are, where these came from, really. And the memories are so vague, they do feel like maybe they were just put in there later.
Yeah. You went to a little school called school something.
I don't know. It feels like wasn't even a lot of imagination involved in creating my false past. But I'm going to cling to it because why not? It's all arbitrary anyway. All stories. You might as well believe. If nothing is true, everything's true. So I'm going to say a thing that had a profound impact on me. And you know, because I've talked about a lot of them, like the Three Stooges and all. But that might have come a little later. I didn't get them right away. Popeye I got. And Popeye appealed to me because he was, I don't know, deformed? Is that the right word? I don't know. He just felt like an outsider. So I get Popeye. Look at what's wrong with his forearms. That happened to my grandfather who died of, I guess it was lung cancer or something, but one of his forearms swelled up like Popeye, but it was fluid from the tumor. But I don't think that's what's going on with Popeye. I think what happens with Popeye is he's using his wrists so much he is a sailor because of the ropes and all of that rope work. And you see that in the gyms now. If there's somebody's like, I'm mainly doing rope grip things, you go, you're going to be all Popeye'd out. It's going to look great. And he still has a lot of bicep, enough to get all sorts of battleships on, and they're animated and everything. I don't understand what's going on with Popeye completely, since Popeye is able to, I don't know why his tats are animated. How is that done? Is he interdimensional or something? I think he is, because I have seen him do this kind of Otto Moebius thing, where he basically puts his head up his own butt, or he goes up. Have you seen this? He'll go either, I think he leans back all the way and then puts his head between his legs and comes up that way. And I've seen it. And I can't tell you the episode, whatever they're called. This episode, Popeye in Take That, Brutus. Brutus is the name that when King Features didn't realize they owned their own character. Listen, you, Popeye, and your odd relation, your girlfriend, or I don't know what's going on there. Let me give you a warning. Don't make a feature film with real people and makeup. Also, Dick Tracy. I know that none of you really did this. You're not responsible. Why am I talking to Popeye and Dick Tracy? They didn't do it. But if anybody ever comes to you and say, like, I think, hey, whoever owns Ziggy, I want to put somebody, like a fun star we all love, like, I don't know, James Corden or something, and put him in a prosthetic nose and everything, and he'll be Ziggy. And he'll say, oh, you know, I wish my emotional baggage was a carry-on or something like that. I think that's a real Ziggy, by the way. That's not, oh, that's a perfect parody. No. That's just one I think I read because I was looking through them. I'm saying, do I want to get one of these paperback compilations of this? Or Family Circus, which is another great one. Scott sent me, one of the Scotts, not you, Scott. Scott sent me some Wizard of Id. I don't know if they're called compilations or what are they called? I guess, you know, since they're in the funny papers, but then they put them out in a book at the end of the year, just like the New York Times crossword puzzles, in case you want to see all the Wizard of Ids together, because maybe there was a story arc. I don't know. So look at Clumsy. This is the one Clumsy Carp was struggling with his, his intellect or something. I don't remember that series. Maybe I'm not clumsy. Maybe it's a neurological, some kind of condition. So there was that. And they went through that. All the funny papers for a while got real serious. And I remember when Hager the Horrible had cancer. And I was like, man, that's a dumb way to go. I thought, this is dumb. You know, stick to the light stuff and everything. But Family Circus would be like, you know, I wonder what the dead are doing now. And then they'd be manifest as transparent spirits that were somehow interfering in the lives of the living. And they were still projecting their jealousies and their prejudice. And going back to revolution times in Family Circus. Y'all still have those? Kids still have that? You kids still like that? Kids would go, I got an AI Bill Keen that I talk to every morning. Really? Yes. That would be, what would that be like? Yes. I got an AI Dick Brown. That's, wow. That's, now you live in my childhood. And it was wonderful getting up early. And you go, I'm going to read my Sidney Omar horoscope. And then later, as when I was in college, I found like, oh my God, he's got albums. And I bought a Sidney Omar album. He doesn't sing or anything. He goes, Capricorn, if today is your birthday. Night like that. I don't think he sounded like that. Capricorn, if today is your birthday. Something like that, maybe. Maybe closer to Wally Cox. I don't know. Oh, I wish, I'm getting a little teary because I wish Wally Cox was alive. People think of my age, think, oh, under the voice of Underdog. But yeah, but an actor, a comic actor, and avant-garde comedian who did some of the first anti-comedy. He did performance art disguised as stand-up in the 50s in the Village. I don't wish I was making that up. I wish you, well, you know that. I talked about it when I did a live performance one time, and I was in the Village, and it was at the old Hi-Fi Bar. It was my first marathon adjacent live show, And I think I talked about Wally Cox doing his Dufo bit. And those are, he did that years before anybody else did anything like that. So he was doing that in like 59 or something, and sort of anti-comedy. And it basically took to the 70s, probably, before people did it that aggressively again. Ah, I love it. And then he'd yodel. So they don't make him like Wally Cox anymore. And he did have, and his, you know, his best friend, everybody by now knows it's a cliche that Brando was just like, they were best friends and everything. And even in, you know, they got that character named Wally Brando in Twin Peaks The Return. That's how much everybody knows that. And I guess that they'd love that combination of tough guy and sensitive guy. But if you know anything about those two people, it's flipped, that Wally is actually the tough guy, motorcycle riding tough guy. And it's the delicate one was Brando. Now, I would like to take you back now to the other day, yesterday, and I noticed on my television set there was a lot of 70s and 60s children shows on there, and I felt seen, but not the kind of scene that you mean. I felt seen like I'm in my changing cabana, or I'm in the shower, and I'm feeling like somebody's looking at me, and that's what it felt like. So I didn't feel like I had been understood, seen. I felt like I'd been voyeurized. Also, I had very niche tastes as a child, and I didn't like a lot of shows that other people liked. And so some of these things that are, you know, you think you're appealing to my nostalgia, I thought they were horrible garbage at the time. And I really felt that way. And a lot of the things I liked might have been just cheesy adult things and not kid things. I was afraid, I know this is weird, I was really afraid of the Banana Splits. I don't know if they're hippie furries. And you go, well, that does sound scary. I know, right? But listen, I was afraid because the shtick was that they look, they're dressed up like, you know, theme park animal people. What I'm talking about, but there's a hippie theme because of when it was. But for me, I thought hippies, like, oh, those are people who go try to give you drugs and everything. They might try to hurt, boo. Don't, you know. So I thought, oh, they're taking and spreading dangerous drugs. I had fallen for the propaganda that all hippies were, you know, shiftless drug addicts. And that is not the whole picture. So, I wonder how the Banana Splits smelled, because now I'm thinking patchouli, but I bet that's not the case. I bet, because now since I had to wear a gorilla suit for a friend's bar was doing a promotion, and they had like a house gorilla suit, and you go, put this on, and you're going to be the gorilla mascot, and you go, blah, blah, blah. And that was something. That gorilla mask was something. That was like, I'm not saying it was like Man in the Iron Mask or whatever that scary French story is or something. I didn't feel like I'd that, but almost. You know, you'd put it on and you'd hear, hold my head as I pray for death. Because it's claustrophobic. It smells like rubber. It smells like you're inhaling something that you shouldn't. And then it also smells like others, because it's not fresh or hasn't been cleaned ever. And then you're collecting odors from an area of people where so your armpit usually that's collects odors, right? But most people's heads are usually constantly aired out, their faces. So you've never, until you've smelled a face that's been sort of cloistered like an armpit, you don't realize that it actually kind of smells worse, I think, because of the breath, because of the deep things that come from your gut, which is a pit of decomposing organic matter, which isn't going to smell great. Why would that smell good? So if anyone's ever belched in the gorilla mask, it's made a sort of a ghost, a sort of olfactory ghost that stays there and haunts it. And I don't know if there's literally any molecules left that would are reminiscent of stale milk, but, you know, you get it, I don't know, intuitively. So I know what was here, and so I'm going to smell it. And then there's a whole, now your whole body is in a suit, too, which is I felt like an awful feeling to me, really. Didn't you think it'd feel cozy, but it doesn't. And I didn't like that at all. It was, I would have rather been in a coffin. He didn't have Coffin Man. Would have been fine. I am Casket Boy. And maybe just my arms are sticking out. But in that, I just tell myself, you're in a Japanese pod hotel, capsule hotel, and you're fine. And you could even have a little screen in there. You know, that wasn't the only. I was also briefly put on the Tallahassee location of Putt-Putt Golf. Had not only did they have Putt-Putt Paul, which I played the role of for a short time. And you know who paid? Here's two famous people. I'm so famous that were Putt-Putt Paul in Tallahassee. Me and the manager of Creed. Isn't that something? That's how we both of us got our start. And you can know you're Googling like crazy. So I remember that when the owner fired that guy and he said, you know, you're going to go on to better things. And he did. It was weird. I thought he was lying. But he said, I'm holding you back. But he didn't say that to me. He didn't say, I'm holding you back from being a clown. But anyway, they had a putt-putt puppy. And putt-putt puppy had a big old traditional, like, college mascot dog head. That was roomy, that felt like a diving helmet from the turn of the century or something. Which century? I don't know. People don't really talk about this one having turned. Although clearly things did. Just again, like milk. But that century, yeah, this we don't really say the turn. Because then people get confused because they have trouble naming centuries anyway because of that illiteracy epidemic that hit a few years ago. But, you know, the turn of the last century, the 19th into the 20th, when 1899 became 1900, see, that's all the ones that begin with 19 are the 20th century. Isn't that crazy? Oh, I thought 20th Century Fox was talking about the future. No, it's talking about, it's just like 1984. It's about now. Now meaning 1948. I hope you like the show that had I don't know which show it was or when it aired or haven't, maybe it hasn't aired yet, about the me reading 1984 to you. Bless you. That's a blast from the past, too. I remember when that came out. Oh, bless you. Do you? No. I wonder what the oldest person listening to the show is. Because I've had a verified 80s, late 80s. But I think I see you right now, listener. Listener 90, you're 93.
You're 1 year off.
Okay. See? How does he do that? I don't try to use my mind-reading time machine powers very often on the air because I don't want to be found out. Who wants to be? What if I reveal that, you know, Hardy can grant wishes? You think I'm going to be left alone? I've read some kind of story about from India about a cow. And it was some white cow kept giving magic, kept giving stuff, and people were always trying to steal it and get everything from it, poor thing. So that's what I'm saying. I don't want to be that. And again, you don't have to. Here's a beautiful thing about detail. It's not always necessary, is it? I wonder. There's always a place to go. There's always. Everything I say is
a fractal or whatever. You can go infinitely. The words are Mandelbrot thingies, and it's an infinite thing, just like the coastline paradox. So you can take each word I say and parse it and trace its origins and things like that, but you don't ever get any closer to the meaning doing that, I don't think. Because some things might be a placeholder and a distraction. So, you know, move ever forward and let your thoughts wander. Well, that is letting my thoughts wander. I stand corrected. Okay, so you are doing it right. It's me who is wrong. When I was watching the Three Stooges, was probably during my grandfather's illness and then subsequent death, I really turned to them for solace and emerged as a fan of slapstick. But I immersed myself in that world because they were broadcasting them on my small black and white television that I watched in my room. And consequently, they happened to be in black and white. Not consequently, but conveniently. So I wasn't missing anything. And I would watch them. And so I remember after school, I'm thinking I must have gotten home by 3:30 or something. And they were on, they'd show about an hour of them. So you could probably get four in an hour, I think. And then I got that great book by Leonard Maltin that he wrote when he was 15 or something about comedy teams, and it had a list of all the Three Stooges movies, shorts, two reelers, all the curly ones, all the Shemp ones, all the Joe Besser ones, all the, Joe is not Besser, Besser aus nicht, Besser aus, what, I don't know, nur is never, why do you say nothing in German? Oh, you're yelling it. See, again, not necessary. Not Curly Joe, all the Curly Joe ones and movies. They're all just the movies for Curly Joe. Curly Joe Dorita. Is he? No, I don't know. Who's he related to? Your Aunt Marita? No, that's just rhymes. They're not. It's not the same name. So I would check them off as they'd come on. I'd take my reference book and I'd say, I've seen that one. And sometimes I'd make little notes about it, you know. Especially if I'd say, hey, wait a minute, I just saw that sequence in another one. They just clipped an earlier one and reusing it, or they've reused a bit. So they would do the parrot got into a turkey thing. They did that a couple of times. And sometimes they do it word for word the same way with Shemp that they did with Curly. Word for word. Isn't that interesting? So if you have to watch them all, really, to figure that out. But then I'd make my little notes. Now, what have I learned? I don't know, but I feel like it was taking apart a clock. I remember hearing a story that my great-grandmother's grandson, he wasn't, who that is, wasn't my anything. So he took apart her clock to see how it worked, didn't put it back together again. But he learned about clocks, or maybe it was a radio. But I feel like that too. You have to take things apart sometimes, like a television show, or just do a real close examination or something, or learn about a thing, and it won't lose its magic necessarily. A whole world will open up. Oh, now that I've started looking into Lord of the Rings, I see so many details. Actually, I can't stand that, but that's all right. I don't like the details. Let me come up with the world. Just give me a loose story. I wonder if there are more wizards. There are. There are three. Here are their names.
Oh, okay.
You don't know anything about them.
I did. Until you closed off that avenue of creativity.
I don't want to get stuck talking like that. My mother would, and your mother too, probably said anything. Sometimes if you do something repeatedly, they'd say you get stuck doing that. and they couldn't be more right. You really do get stuck in some sort of behavior sometimes. So, I get stuck again in a habit. And then when you've been lured into that habit by the television or the little handhold telephone television thing, the stare at pad or whatever it is. I don't know what it is. It's spooky to me. Because it looks like, I don't know, it feels like it's one of those cuneiform tablets, clay tablets. And even some, there's stylus and everything, but like, I don't know. I feel like maybe that the phone like that we have, they are the result of a curse that someone did originally on mankind with one of those clay tablets. And they were like, you're going to stare at the clay tablets, and then your whole life will be run by the ancient Mesopotamian god Akhmalikhatalakhamum. I love movies like that where there's an ancient god you forgot about, and you go, man, I totally forgot about Huktar. Oh, wow. He was in some kind of cube prison. And now he's making a comeback. And he's going to do one last great thing like Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights. Except it'll be evil. And then he'll go and fade again. And there'll be more monsters and gods from the depths of the human mind and imagination. The good thing about it is like the scariest monsters come from the human imagination. And since humans are losing their imagination, maybe the monsters will lose the monsters too. So that would be lovely. You don't even have the imagination to anticipate real dangers too, I guess is the downside. But it's beautiful just to watch a thing. Not have to think anymore. Think machine. What do my feet look like?
Here's a recent picture of your feet.
Oh, they look good. So, I don't know if we're there yet, but I feel a little bit, you know, maybe. Do I have skills? I was thinking that the other day because I was trying to pass the stranded on an island test. So I'm stranded on an island, and it wouldn't be like Gilligan's Island. There would be a minion. I feel like you can't say, there had too few people. When Sherwood Schwartz started that show, he said, they each represent, I'm not going to do the voice. They each represent some kind of aspect of society.
They don't.
I mean, well, if you're blocking out a great deal of people. So even if you're going to come up with archetypes, you just don't have enough people to do that on Gilligan's Island. Unless you include like Harold Hecuba or whatever, visitors. And you're not going to do that. Nehemiah Persoff does not count. So I would have an island. I say there's at least 10 people. Ideally 12. Because then that's like real life where there's 12 types of people. And then I say, well, what can I do, though, that will, you know, fill a niche for them? Because in real life, I've found like when I think I've found it, there's somebody who also does it better. And they're also a medical doctor on top of that. So I always think like, oh, yikes, I better specialize. But it's really hard to do to become the only one who's good at something. Unless you pick something nobody wants, you know. And I, out of 12 people, maybe you're the only philatelist. But it is a desert island. So it's not applicable. And somebody comes to you in the tent, hey, could you ask me a question? Yeah. Is this stamp worth anything? I'm glad you came to me. And I don't know if that would really ever come up. So I was hoping, you know, it would be something practical. And fooling people counts. You got to get one of those people has to be like a BSer or somebody who would fool you or any like some kind of priest class, you know, just to blow something up you're fine. That person, I don't know what you'd have. I could probably do that. And because us also, like, people like myself are good at summoning up deep emotions during, you know, like events, like, what do you call it? Like graduations and weddings and everything like that, rituals that you transition from one stage to the next. And I could do that. So maybe, you know, professional wedding crier or funeral crier. And I mean, one who cry, weeper, not crier. Funeral, get your funeral. I would sell funerals door to door. I bet it's done. You know, here's the events. They have those now. They have the places that are more like those indoor theme park places, but they're for funerals. So they've got, I don't know, bowling and go-karts, but they do it for the dead. It's fun. I don't want people to be staring at my corpse in a box or something like that. I want them to get like a fistful of tokens. So go play the whack-a-mole. Go do the skeet ball. Go play the pinball. Play it. Think about Hardy. And stuff like that. Oh, and then I would love it if they could fake my ghost or something. Have some kind of projection thing where people keep thinking they're seeing me.
I keep thinking I see him. I see him, smell him even.
So, you know, spray my cologne around or something like that. And then he's like,
oh, thank you for coming, Scott. Or Mark. Who do I know? Matt. All the Matts and Scotts are here.
So, I'd be terrified. I'd love it. Oh, my goodness. Oh, you're being so dark. I don't think that's dark. Dude, don't we have to laugh our way through some things? I think it's very subversive to be happy. It annoys people. I know it does in the movies and stuff. Like when they're trying to torture you and you're, stop your laughing! Like that. Maybe it's just, is it just Hogan's Heroes? There's not a lot of torture on that except for the viewer. But I want, you know, it is sort of defiant to be, and you don't be any pressure to be joyous. You can, you know how to fake being happy. Do that. But also, I would really love to advocate. Listen, life is really short. And if I could give you anything, if old, humble old Hardy White, and I don't mean humble like I don't think highly of myself. I mean like humble, I shouldn't feel highly of myself. I want to tell you this, that it's, you ought to be gentle on yourself. Give yourself credit. You say, well, no, forget. Look, life is really short. You know, don't you want to, wouldn't you want to be like somebody who was really pleased with themselves? Yeah, those idiots. Exactly. Well, just be one of those idiots. Nobody's going to, there's no penalty. And I just feel better when I give myself some credit or don't beat up on me or I'm sort of like annoyingly cheerleadery with myself. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I've experimented with self-loathing and all sorts of things. And just like alcohol or anything, you go, hey, this is working pretty good. So, but it really isn't a lifestyle. And nobody can get in your brain. You can even just secretly be pleased with yourself. You know, you don't have to tell anybody. You know, I actually like myself. I know you like yourself, or you wouldn't be eating that delicious ice cream, which is only for people who love themselves. I'm lactose intolerant. I don't know. Whatever you're treating yourself to, something, a delicious donut, or whatever your donut equivalent is, you know, reward yourself a little something, spoil you. And too many people are spoiled. I don't know. I feel like life is going to get you. You know, if you're worrying about experiencing any kind of balance in your life, I feel like it'll get you at some point and provide balance. And you don't have to do that, really. You can outsource that. I've outsourced it to disease. Say, I'm going to let disease be my nemesis, not me. And then I'll just like, you know, I'll like me. I'll be for me. And I love you. And I hate to see people I love and have affection for and see great worth and character's strength in and great lovability, and they've in such pain they can't see themselves. But that's not their fault at all. You know, it's just so hard if your eyes hurt to really, and maybe people are saying, open them and look at yourself. And I can't, my eyes hurt too much. So I understand. And so I just, I embrace you, stand with you. I don't demand you do anything. I'll just be right here with you. And that's all. Because I feel like there's a same with healing, you know? You don't need any, but you just need somebody to be with you. I'm not going to, not to solve everything, not to tell you how to do it. And that's what my mission has always been, is not to give you answers, is to give you some companionship and to give you some acknowledgement. You know, let's say, here's the whole thing. In a Cliff's Notes, you're a teacher or a child with a high emotional maturity, and you're on the playground at recess, and there is a child sitting alone on a bench, and you notice that child, and you go to that child and say, may I sit next to you? And they say yes or no. Let's say they say yes. You sit down next to them. Now, you may ask them, you know, if they're okay. If they say yes, you know, you may just sit there with them. Because sometimes what people need is some companionship. They might not know how to ask for it, you know. So I thought the radio is a great way to solve that, because some people may never be able to ask for it. And this way, you can get it. It's just like those deliveries. It's a contactless delivery of friendship. So you do not have to come to the door and answer, here's your food. What did you get? I can smell it all the way here. What is it? You just got to tell me. It smells delicious. I didn't have any. I didn't have any, but I smelled it up. You don't have to do that. They leave it right at the bottom of the door, and you can go sneak and tuck it. That's what I'm offering you, friendship-wise. It's just some comfort food left at your door. You can come grab it and not be alone for a minute, and especially not be alone with somebody who knows maybe not exactly what you're going through, but that you are, because, boy, that's the way around here. I don't know if you're new here, but, boy, it ain't easy. And sometimes what we need is just a little acknowledgement of that. And then not a steady diet of the acknowledgement, because that's a little face rubby. And then we distract. So we acknowledge and distract. Or distract. What I just did is distract and acknowledge. But you could do it either way. You could flip it. I also love to evoke feelings and images, too. I want to take you places. I want you to feel what it feels like to be on a moon base Alpha on Space 1999. And just imagine you're on moon base Alpha. The moon has been knocked out of Earth's orbit, and it's just going around having adventures. Like Herbie's Love Bug or something, but it's a moon. And you're zipping throughout the universe, and every planet has a different British character actor that you remember from something else. And it's a lovely thing to watch. But the people make it tedious, even though the costumes are by Rudy Gernreich, designer of the Monokini, which is a lovely thing. I don't own one, but I'm sort of for it. Also, I saw a Rudy Gernreich exhibit at the Cincinnati Museum of Art, and it was wonderful. It had all those kind of, you know, wonderful mod dresses that had matching boots and a hat, and they're all the same pattern. Wowie wow. Well, anyway, imagine a whole moon base like that. But the thing with the people is, though, they make them act and everything. And what I like is a sort of tabula rasa, or some sort of stage, or some sort of fun play area. And so I imagine Moonbase Alpha deserted. And the only ones there are you and me. Not just you and me, if that's creepy, but you know what I mean. Maybe just you and then just me, or where we take turns using it. I don't know. Or we invite 5-6 people. Who knows? But we're zipping around the moon that way, and we have the adventures. And I like it that way. And it's better in many ways. And so this is a sort of write your own adventure show. Say, I imagine Hardy and I are on a car trip. If you are driving in the car, say maybe Hardy's next to me. And, you know, he won't leave any space for me to talk. But you can still be thinking things. And you can practice tuning me out as a way of tuning out your in-laws or somebody or a work person. And so get very used to someone speaking, but you don't have to listen. It's an art, especially if you're making eye contact. What I do is, how I do it is, if I want to tune somebody out, but I have to let them know I'm listening, I make eye contact, but in my mind, I play hold music. So I'll be looking at you in the eye, nodding and smiling, and I'm hearing, time it was, it was a time it was, it was a time it was, a time of Washington, pooping things. It's instrumental version, though, of the Simon and Garfunkel. Celia, you're breaking my heart. And you just keep talking, and I'm looking at your eyes, and I just hear that. Or sometimes it's the association I hear. You know, never my love. I hear that a lot when people are saying things to me I don't want to hear. That's just a technique. It's a hack, as the kid calls. Hey, here's a hack. What is it? Ah! And then they cough up some bolus of phlegm. And that was my royal title for my when I was a member of the aristocracy. That was one of many. You know, I was a baron, but I was also the bolus of phlegm. A lot of these are sci-fi domains that I inhabited, not traditional samurai domains. I am in, or I am going to, or I have just returned from Japan, or I may not have made it. That's the other thing that's disconcerting. So here I am, like if I did say that, I was on the way there, and then I had perished. And so he never made it, and that's the show where he said he was going. So I don't want to say whether I'm already there. I could be already there, and I pre-recorded this. It could be that show. I could have done it when I got back because I was really tired, really, really jet-lagged. So I'm just going to play that show that I recorded on. Why don't you go play it again? I'm not telling you when. And it could be that one. So I don't know whether I am never made it to Japan, had a wonderful time, am nervous about going. Who knows? But Japan is in there, and you're going to be hearing about it soon. And one of the places that I may have gone, might go, or maybe didn't make it to, is Aizu. And Aizu Wakamatsu is the whole name of it. And it's an old samurai town. And I imagine just people walking down the street in samurai gear going, you know, hey, sheriff. Hey, Tom. But I don't know if it was like that, but I'm learning more about it and everything, and the Civil War and everything. So I'm going to be, of course, integrating that into it so I could share some stories with you. And I'm going to try to do things that are a little bit touristy, but then I'm also going to be doing non-touristy things, like, you know, just having dinner with people, and that'll be nice, because I like to chat with people from other countries who work, not just artists, and that's what I'll be doing. So that's fun. Oh, bless you. I'm just joking about the artists. Artists work. My gosh, this is work. Some of them get paid, not as many as you think. So don't be upset. Not me. Of course not. Don't worry about it. It's a gift. You're blessed. Blessed with some kind of sight, and you know, you might not be rewarded, but but you get to see. That's lovely. And I don't know, would you say, if somebody said to you, I'm going to give you this gift of dance, and you'll be the one of the greatest dancers to ever live, but nobody can see it. Like, you can only do it when you're alone. Would you take it?
Well, why? What do I have to lose?
Oh, that's true. I'm gonna think about that question and reform it. Something you lose, something else. But I wonder if it was something you couldn't show anybody, would you still want it as a gift? Is making art or self-expression, is it just intrinsically rewarding, or does it need to be part of communication? Is it, you know, and I know many of you will say, no, I'd love to do it for myself and everything like that. Well, there's a lot of things you can do both alone and with others, and there are degrees of wonderfulness probably. But so I guess both is the answer, really. And I guess if the alternative is not doing it, then I would go ahead and I'll waste time doing it, because I like making little pictures or recording little silly things or singing really silly songs. And I try to make up for my propensity, my habit of making up silly songs, to not spend a lot of time on them, so as not to seem as if my friends or anybody has an obligation to appreciate them. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of the art I make, well, he didn't spend much time on that, so I don't have to really like it or anything, because he didn't invest a lot of himself in it. Exactly. So I get the thrill of making something, the fun of making it, without the burden of it, because sometimes we put so much ourself into something, a project, that if nobody likes it, it's hard. You know, it really is. But I'm telling you, I have never been so partially satisfied since I became committed to being half-assed. It's just, you know how I don't know whether it's true or not, that the pirates would have the patch. They would cover one eye so that if they were fighting below deck, they would move it to the other eye and they'd have night vision. And I feel like that with my arse, that I always have half of it. So it's like rotating your crops. So if you do everything sort of half-assed, and then you always have a spare one. So it's just like using one buttock, and I'm saving the other one, and maybe I'll switch and then reserve the other one. How about that? So I guess I don't know why people go all in on stuff. You know, it's okay to not, you don't have to go all in. Not everything is a Squid Game or something. So I'm lost. That's the way, it made me very unpopular on, I would never get picked for any kind of team, because I couldn't, you know, like, I catch it, I don't. And that is not the sports ethic, apparently. I do it, I don't. I did better, like, I hate golf, but because I'm terrible at it, but at least nobody's really pressuring you. They are to go fast and to be good. I guess there is pressure in all sports, but who knows? I love moving around, though, as you know. So I move myself around and express myself that way. And I speak to you, and our friendship means a lot to me, because I know this life is rough and it's hard and it hurts and you hurt. And so I'm giving you a big old radio, not a hug. Everybody's, the hug is not the only way to show solidarity. Another way is the high sign. So I'm making some kind of gesture. I'm touching my nose or something. Giving you the high sign. So now you know, and you need that. Sometimes people just need that. I'm acknowledging. High sign. I am Hardy White, and you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for listening. I will see you again next week.
Welcome.
So brilliant. I thought
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.